Hello, and welcome to the Double Take Podcast with Jess and Jenny, where we give our takes on all things TV. It is that time again, another month, which means another preview. So we're going to do our April preview, all the shows coming out. Nope, I'm lying. You can catch all of the shows that are coming out in April. We did an entire in-depth list over, I want to say, over 20 movies and TV shows premiering or returning in April. And you can catch that over on our newsletter, doubletake.substack.com. dbltake.substack.com, which is also in our show notes. But in this podcast, we're choosing our favorites, the things we're most excited about, because otherwise this podcast would literally be 3 hours long.
And it's more fun to talk about the ones that we actually have things to say, because I don't have that much to say about season 3 of Alex Rider.
Any of the shows that are coming back on the CW, I don't think I have that much to say about. And I was surprised at how many shows the CW has in general that are like ongoing. We don't know who has what listed as their shows they're excited about, but we do know chronologically where they fall. So maybe, I don't know, do you think you have the first one?
I would like to say, I probably do, but I also want to say, I'm going to amend the word excited to the word interested in speaking about, because there are a few shows on here that I don't have high hopes for. Excited feels like a strong word, but I do want to speak about them. For a variety of reasons.
I hear that. Yeah, I agree. And with that, I think we can start.
I think I have the first one, because I don't think you watched season one of Loot.
That was going to be my guess as well. Yeah, I did not. But
I think
it's because
you should.
I think you said it wasn't great.
Well, okay. It wasn't great. I didn't love it. And it makes sense that you didn't watch it after I reviewed it that way. I feel like it had potential. And I was mad that it didn't live up to what I expected from it. But I think that my expectations really ruined my experience compared to somebody who didn't have that expectation. But I'll backtrack a little bit for the listeners. Loot is on Apple TV. It stars
Maya Rudolph.
It stars Maya Rudolph as a woman who basically she's Jeff Bezos's ex-wife. Like, that's the character. She's married to this tech billionaire, gets divorced, has an $87 billion settlement from the divorce, and decides to become a charitable person and is like devoted to the charity that's in her name that she's never spent any time on before. And I think that there was such a good setup here for satire. It's literally based on Jeff Bezos and his divorce in real life. Like, it is the perfect opportunity for satire. And yet the show is not satire. It's just an ensemble comedy, which to me felt so weird.
I think I forgot about that. But when you were just talking about it, I was like, oh, yeah, I wonder if the satire wasn't that good. And then you saying there's no satire. That's very confusing.
It's so odd. It's like they almost go for it in the first episode and then they backtrack and there's no satire at all. And it just becomes an ensemble comedy or a workplace comedy set at this charitable foundation. And it's just like kooky characters work there. But where's this? It's still very puzzling to me that there's no satire. And she's a confusing character because of that. Because, I mean, there's no good billionaires.
Are you supposed to think of her as ethical, or is it sort of a question? Okay,
they don't even pose that question. Basically, like, they sort of hint at it, but it's not satire. So then you're like, oh, so she is a good. We like her. When they hint at like, oh, like she is actually giving back. She is like caring now, but. There's just so much there to unpack and they just don't. And I don't know if I could get behind it unless they sort of – I have a feeling it's going to go even further down the ensemble comedy route in season two and even further away from any hint of satire. And so I guess my two choices are I can embrace the show for what it is and try to get over that. I find it very confusing, but maybe I could. Or I just stop watching it because it's not the show that I want it to be.
Well, it comes out April 3rd, in 2 days after we're recording this. So are you going to at least try an episode or?
No, I will. I have it on my list to check it out. I'm not going to ignore it entirely. But I think maybe I just watch the first few episodes and then decide if I want to watch the rest of the season. I'll know from there, probably.
Fair enough. I don't know. If I have time, maybe I'll check out the first season, see if I can do the – see how I feel with such low expectations. But yeah, it was not – I love Maya Rudolph.
but that's about where my interest in the show ends.
I do really like
starts and ends.
And I liked her in theory as this character. Like,
yeah,
good for her for being like, you know, get the money, be the billionaire.
Oh yeah,
that's cool. It just doesn't. It just the character choices didn't make sense to me. It also is. So it's created. It was created by Alan Yang, who co-created Master of None. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a really thoughtful show in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But he also wrote for Parks and Rec. I mean, that's how he met Aziz Ansari. But so it makes sense that it would be an ensemble comedy because of his experience with ensemble comedies. But I guess I expected when I first heard about it, I was thinking more Master of None and less Parks and Rec. So, but it's more Parks and Rec, and that's okay.
Got it.
It's just maybe not yeah. for me.
I kind of think you might have, maybe not. Well, yeah, I kind of think you might have the next one as well, but I could be wrong. My next thing comes out April 4th.
Ripley, I'm assuming it's not Star Trek Discovery Season 5.
You would assume correct.
Before we talk about Ripley, I just need you to know that today on Facebook, the memory that popped up, you know how those pop up at the top sometimes?
Yeah, but we're going to need to come back to the fact that you're on Facebook.
I have a lot of groups on there that I have to check up on. So I had a notification I clicked on, and what popped up was your memories on Facebook. 12 years ago, Jennifer Cullen wrote on my wall, Star Trek is on. Come over now. Chinese food and shenanigans will ensue. When did we ever watch Star Trek?
Could that have been an inside joke that we're not remembering?
I have literally no idea, but I thought that was perfect timing for today because I was gonna make fun of Star Trek Discovery. Not make fun of it, just point out that neither of us are watching it at all, let alone the fifth season of it. And then that popped up as my memory. Wow. What perfect timing.
Yeah, either we are hypocrites or...
I've never seen an episode of Star Trek.
I definitely have, but only with my dad. So I can't imagine that I was like, come watch a TV show with me and my dad.
Unless it was the movie, which I don't think would be the case.
That actually seems more likely. Chris Pine, guy with the eyebrows. Yeah, that could have been the case.
It is a good movie.
Anyway, thank you for bringing that embarrassment into this world. But yeah, if you don't have anything to talk about before Ripley, I would like to talk about Ripley.
Yeah, we can talk about Ripley.
I was wondering if you were going to watch American Horror Story, Delicate. I feel like that's...
No, I have not watched any. I watched like two episodes of the first season of American Horror Story back when it first came out, and it was too weird for me, and I never tried again.
Huh. Somehow that surprised me. But yes, let's talk about Ripley instead, which is a limited series that will be on Netflix April 4th, all 8 episodes, as is usual for Netflix, unless you're at Bridgerton or Stranger Things Season 3 or 4 or whatever. It's an adaptation of a novel called The Talented Mr. Ripley, which many people will have heard of, but it stars Andrew Scott, the love of my life, as the titular conman. And the story goes, he's hired to convince a wealthy man's layabout son to return from his extended vacation in Italy. This limited series will also star Johnny Flynn, who I recognize the name, but I can't picture. And then Dakota Fanning and John Malkovich, who I can picture very well. But yeah, that's the whole thing. Only 8 episodes. I think mainly my draw to this is Andrew Scott. I think he's excellent.
I like Dakota Fanning.
She's also excellent. But I think if it were just like Dakota Fanning is in The Talented Mr. Ripley, I don't know that I would be like, oh, a side character. Let me watch this show for her.
You know that this was a movie, right?
The Talented Mr. Ripley?
Yeah.
I mean, sure. It's been adapted before.
Like a very popular movie. You didn't say it in your premise description, so I was curious.
No, because I didn't see it.
That makes sense. Fair enough. I think, you said most people like might know it by name, but I think like a lot of people will have seen the movie. It was a pretty big movie. It was a little bit before our time. It didn't come out, it came out in 1999. So before our like watching movies time, but it's a Matt Damon movie. Yeah, most people will have probably seen that. So this is like for a lot of people a remake. Like they'll probably be like, oh, why do we need another remake kind of thing. But I think it's probably different take on it slightly.
Yeah. I would bet. I mean, not having seen the movie, but yeah, I don't know. I guess I just assumed everyone knew the general premise of the story because it's because it's a book, but I guess maybe the movie is more widespread.
Yeah, I think there are probably people who don't even realize that that was based on a book, I'm assuming.
The circulation of content.
Some people will know it that way, but I just assumed I should plug that one in case people are sitting here like, what do you mean? It's a popular movie. This one is all in black and white, which is kind of interesting. And I don't know if spooky. I like that. I don't know. It feels like a little forced.
I mean, yes, but I have yet to see something that Andrew Scott is in that I haven't thought the production was done well, or like I feel like somehow he's just been attached. Even like, I was going to say even Sherlock, but obviously Sherlock was done well. I just mean, it's not like an artsy production, but just everything that he's attached to, I feel like winds up being very good.
What else has he been?
I don't. Fleabag season 2. Other things that I'm totally blanking on. I mean, more movies lately, but he's been in a couple of other British things that I've seen that I've really enjoyed, but that might be just sort of like my bias / preference. Anyway. Yeah. The new movie that he's in with, what's his face? Irish boy from, why can't I remember any names of anything right now?
Barry Keoghan?
No, the other Irish boy from the, oh God, everyone's going to be so mad at me.
What? I don't know any other Irish boys.
Yes, you do. Oh, yes, you do. In the sad, I'm kicking myself. I can't remember any names of things. Producer, this is where we need you.
That'll be you when you're forced to edit your own blunder.
I know. Paul Mescal. Oh my God. You know who that is, yes?
Yes, I know Paul Mescal. I don't know the movie that you're talking about.
It doesn't matter. We don't have to draw this out any longer than necessary. Anyway, he is lovely and wonderful, and I'm excited to see him in this role.
This was also created by Steven Zalian, who created The Night Of, which is a crime psychological thriller miniseries that I really, really liked a lot. Mm. And so I'm hoping there are similar vibes. I mean, this is a crime psychological thriller miniseries. So chances are that they'll have similar vibes. That one is very, very dark. And I don't know if that's – I assume that that's how this one's going to be. But yeah, I think that that makes me excited about it. He also wrote Schindler's List, which I did not realize until this morning. But yeah, The Night Of was good. One of my faves. Incredibly dark.
The other Irish person in a TV show that I was excited about was Sugar, which is on Apple TV Plus on April 5th. Colin Farrell is the executive producer and star about in this. It's a mystery series. And Colin Farrell will be the private detective tracking down an elite Hollywood producer's beloved granddaughter who has disappeared. And I don't think that I'm interested in this premise, like, on the whole, but I think Colin Farrell being attached also makes me excited because he's cool and he does weird, kooky stuff. And that's about it. Those are my entire thoughts.
There's like a twist, not a literal twist in the mystery sense of it, but a twist in the concept of the show. And then I think that there are sci-fi elements to it, but I don't know how that's gonna play out. But it's like the website, Apple's press website or whatever, calls it genre bending or like genre twisty or something like that. And I got an email about the show that was like, hello sci-fi lover, like this show comes out soon. And I was like, sci-fi, what a weird way to present that. So I am very curious how that manifests, but I was gonna watch this either way because I love a mystery.
Nice. Yeah, some the sci-fi element, not that Colin Farrell is like super into sci-fi, but I just feel like all of his stuff sort of has a little bit of a twist. So that's,
I like the generalization of that. I'm pretty sure he's been in like a million movies and maybe some of them have twists.
Or not twists. I just mean like not twists. The twists in the way that we were talking about of sort of like think like in Bruges, I feel like is one of the most popular things that he's been in. And it's just like a little wacky. But I feel like a lot of his stuff has a little bit of a wacky tilt. Maybe, yeah, you're right. Maybe I'm overgeneralizing.
Some of it does, some of it doesn't. In Bruges definitely does. I love In Bruges. But he's the best part. Well, there are actually a lot of good parts of The Gentleman, but he's really good in The Gentleman. But that's just a straightforward Guy Ritchie movie. But I think really the key here is that in the stuff that you would watch, that there is a twist.
Yeah, that's fair. There is Aileen. But then, yes, Dinosaur is the same day, another British comedy from Fleabag producers that also stars the actress from My Mad Fat Diary, which was, I feel like it was like either an ITV show or it was some British streaming service that I somehow found probably from Tumblr and watched My Mad Fat Diary. And the main actress in that is stars in Dinosaur. And she was great. So that kind of makes me excited about the combination of her plus Fleabag producers, female-led British comedy. I'm intrigued. That'll be on Hulu April 5th. You look skeptical about it, though.
Yeah. But I like, I mean, obviously I like Fleabag. That's not a controversial take. It's just that I don't know necessarily about the premise. But
about it being, yeah.
Well, they're centering a woman with autism. Does the actress in real life have autism?
I don't know.
I feel like it's tricky to get that right.
Totally.
So I'm curious what that will be like.
Right. It's either if the actress herself has autism or if someone very central to the production and or writing staff can guide. Like, I feel like that is maybe the way to go. And yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what they're working with here, because it could easily be either offensive or just like totally not representative, which would also be bad. So it is, yeah, an interesting line.
It's a hard thing to get right, I think, but I do have more faith in British writers for some reason, just like across the board, feel that way. So I don't know. I think it'll be probably good. It's gonna fly under the radar no matter what. It's like a small British production that's just dropping on Hulu. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I will wait probably and before I watch.
Okay. And then also, I think you mentioned it to me, but I'm not sure if it was on the podcast or not, depending on how this editing goes about. Mary and George, a limited series on Stars, which I don't currently have, but I did at one point, and maybe we'll return to for this. But it's, I mean, Julianne Moore, interesting, is a desperate countess who is trying to position her son and coach her son into be everything he needs to be the lover of King James I, so that they can essentially just move upward in power. It's an interesting premise. I like court scheming TV shows, movies, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I think those are usually pretty interesting. Sometimes they get a little CW in their execution. I don't think this one will be that way. But
doubtful.
Stars
with Julianne Moore.
With Julianne Moore. But yeah, it sounds promising.
It's also Nicholas Galitzine, who a lot of people like.
That's true.
He doesn't really do anything for me.
I was going to say, I could care less. Couldn't care less. I could probably care less. I care a little. But it is, I do like Julianne Moore.
Yeah, interesting that she's in a TV show and sort of like a random one. That's what makes me feel like interested by this, even though I would never watch this by premise alone. This is so much more a you show than a me show. But Julianne Moore in a TV show, I'm so intrigued.
I know. I wonder if she is pretending to be British also was my second thought, because this is about the court of King James I, but she could be a countess from somewhere else.
Again, yeah, but they always make them British if accents. They're supposed to be from somewhere else.
Fair enough. Yeah, color me intrigued.
It's also already out in England, and so like we can see the reception there has been positive.
Theoretically,
so that makes me feel like intrigued. Again, not excited, but interested.
Agreed. I wonder if I should try to watch it before it comes out with my special British VPN.
My little hack. I feel like that would work better for you than, I mean, you don't have Stars, so you might as well. I also do not have Stars.
Stars, can you make a good case as to why? I mean, I know what the niche they're carving out is. This type of show is the like Outlander, is the period piece in a lot of ways. Those are the only two examples that I can come up with right now. But I feel like there have been other things on Stars that have been a similar vibe.
They had Minx on Stars. And so that's what I got the trial for, and I watched it, or maybe I got a month of it. But There's not a lot on Stars. And so whenever these sort of smaller streaming services have a show I want to watch, I get annoyed because, like, you can't put 3 shows on your streaming service and tell me that that's a worthwhile time, worth the money. And yeah, they have movies, but so does everyone. Like, I don't think they have any exclusives that I've been excited by. So why am I going to spend that money? I probably won't watch this because of that, because I just remembered actually about the Minx situation and I don't have a trial available to me anymore.
Sad.
Also, I'm mad because they canceled Minx.
Oh, officially? I did not realize that.
Yeah, officially.
Bummer. I'm really sorry. I know you liked Minx. I just recently recommended Minx to someone. Oops. I hope they're ready for disappointment.
I mean, it's still a solid 2 seasons. I don't think that they're removing it the way Max did.
Yeah. I feel like I've taken up the time with my British chunk of April 5th releases. Oh, wait, no, I'm lying. I have another British one.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a British one on there that's not on my list, so go for it.
Hapless, is this what we're – yeah.
Yes, that's what we're referring to.
So it's a British cringe comedy series, which I know not so much your thing, but it sounds kind of interesting. It's already out in the UK, but it's coming to Peacock April 10th. And the synopsis is just, it follows an obsessive, blunder-prone journalist of a fictional Jewish newspaper, and it has the tone of Curb Your Enthusiasm, is what people are saying. So I feel like I have a circle of friends that this would really appeal to, and so I sort of want to watch it so that I can point them in this direction. And that's about it. I'm okay with cringe comedy, especially British cringe comedy, but I don't know that on this premise alone. I haven't seen Curb Your Enthusiasm, actually, partially because, I don't know, there things without a story and more like we're just following Larry David, be Larry David, are less, I get the appeal to other people, but just like less appealing to me. So I'm lightly interested in Hapless, but I'll watch and I'll report back.
Interesting. Yeah, I will await your report.
Okay.
There's one on here that I didn't know if it was on your list or not, but you watched season 1 of Heartbreak High, didn't you?
I did. I did indeed.
Is season 2 on your list?
Yeah, maybe when, yeah, maybe as like a light watch when I need something to review for the newsletter, but I don't know that I would go out of my way to watch it.
I'm not interested in that one. I just thought maybe you were. The next one on my list is Fallout.
Yes, that's also on mine.
Not because I have any specific interest in it. Just I think it'll be a big show. They've been pushing it for months and months and months. I think they want
have
it to be.
Have you been seeing?
Yeah, I've seen ads.
Oh, I have not seen any ads.
I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah.
I have seen some. I think Are that Prime wants this to be The Last of Us. And that's why No, I haven't seen any video ads, just poster type ads.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I don't know where I would see poster type ads in Philly, except
no,
on
like
billboards,
on
which...
like images online. Poster's not the right word. Photo ads.
Huh. That's so interesting. Okay. Sorry. You were saying they want this to be The Last of Us, which seems...
Yeah, I mean, it's the same... in my mind, the same concept. I'm sure video game people are sitting there like, absolutely not, they're so different. But they're both like dystopian alternate Earth type shows. Or
right, like
type video games. Yeah, post-apocalyptic. That's the word I wanted. Thank you. And so in my mind, they're the same. I know they're different. There's no infected... zombies. I cannot use the word zombies at whatever in Fallout. I don't really know what the antagonist is in Fallout. I just know that they're both post-apocalyptic. But what I am excited about is Ella Purnell, who I adore. She stars in Fallout. She was in Yellow Jackets and something else. But yeah, she's in this Walton Goggins, who I really love from The Righteous Gemstones. Although I've only ever seen him in Danny McBride comedies, and I don't think that he's comedic in this. I don't think this is a comedy. So intrigued by that. And Kyle MacLachlan, who I love, love, love. So great cast. Otherwise, I don't know much about the story or if video game people are excited about it or like what the vibe is. But I will definitely watch.
Yeah, I think I will too. I was pleasantly surprised by The Last of Us. I used to watch a lot of the post-apocalyptic like movies that came out. I Legend, like any of the, I don't know. I find that story somewhat interesting. At this point, it's been a little played out, but if they're trying to rival The Last of Us, I'm sure the production has got a lot of money and like effort that has gone into it. And so that will be exciting to see, hopefully.
I feel like we went through a phase as a world, as a culture, of post-apocalyptic stuff in like 2008 to 2012. And then maybe when the world didn't end in 2012, everyone was like, all right, let's be done with this. I would take more. I love these stories. I would watch a million of these. Like Silo last year was the first one I feel like we had in a while besides The Last of Us in terms of like sort of post-apocalyptic slash dystopian tales. And I want more. I love these.
I'm sure there have been movies that we're not thinking of, but TV-wise, yeah, I think you're right. Those are what come to mind. Sure. Yeah, I would take more. They're not number one on my list, but I hear you. They're entertaining. I like them. That comes out unless we said already, but also April 11th, same as Heartbreak High, the show I'm mildly interested in.
Fallout's the 12th. Prime.
Fallout's the 12th?
And Heartbreak High is on Netflix. But good try with that sentence.
The Heartbreak High, I hadn't said what it was on yet. I thought it was the same date.
The structure of the sentence made me think you were saying Heartbreak High was on Prime, but you were saying Fallout's on Prime. Heartbreak High is on Netflix on the 11th. Fallout is Prime on the 12th.
Next thing that is on my list, I think, is kind of further down.
You don't have Franklin on your list?
No, shush.
No, wait, I'm being serious. I really thought you would have that on there.
I think it's just like annoyed. John Adams. I know, but I think I'm annoyed. Like, I like John Adams for what it is, and I think maybe it's because it was made long enough ago that I appreciate it, but I am annoyed with a lot of the historical remakes, especially historical remakes about like U.S. presidents. I'm like, find something else in history to talk about. I'm jaded in a way that is silly, but I mean, I like Benjamin Franklin. Philly likes Benjamin Franklin. We should all think more about Benjamin Franklin, I guess. But I was so like, Manhunt was a disappointment. It wasn't really about Abraham Lincoln, I suppose. I suppose that was more about the aftermath and sort of leading up to his assassination. But still, just like, I don't know. Maybe this is going to be really good. I don't have high hopes. It's also Apple TV Plus. It feels like Apple TV Plus was like, rubs hands together. Let's get everything we can on the founding fathers. I'm like, that's why?
No, that's not true. I'm not interested really at all. But and I guess it's fair that you wouldn't be excited. I did think you would at least be like interested. But I don't think it'll be very good. I think it'll be like classic Apple TV. They're on a bad streak in my mind.
Especially with their historical dramas. I mean, historical like biopics kind of. Bio dramas. What am I trying to say? Yeah.
I get that they're like vanity projects in a lot of ways for them. Or at least I think they are. But how is no one over there thinking critically about like what is dramatic and interesting in these stories? Instead of just being like, yeah, let's throw a bunch of money to recreate the story of Abraham Lincoln's assassination.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing that made John Adams particularly interesting was, one, the direction, like the way that it was shot was very, the person involved, the director, the like production team had a vision, and that it's not just like, there are some weird like Dutch camera angles and just like things about the production that you could tell are really thought through. And so it's interesting to watch, even if you're not totally engrossed in what's on the screen. And then also Paul Giamatti, just captivating as like this dude. I feel like not a lot of people knew about John Adams. And so there was all of this like new stuff about his internal character coming up. And even though I understand that miniseries is kind of like boring to some people, I think there's still merit in watching it. It was like really well done. I can't say the same for the Apple TV Plus shows that I've seen that are of like a, feel like of a similar ilk. And I'm mainly talking about Manhunt, but there have been others. A lot of the Apple TV Plus sort of like historical bio dramas are not doing it for me.
Yeah, I don't have high hopes for this one. So were you saying you think I have the sympathizer on my list and you don't? Is that what
you No, but do you? I thought you were going to have Under the Bridge on your list.
Do you not have the sympathizer on your list? The sympathizer is, sir. Oh my God, that's so hard to say. The sympathizer is indeed on my list.
I don't have it on my list.
Well, let me speak about it. So
please do.
I have not read the book, but I have heard of the book and I've heard good things about it, and it won the Pulitzer Prize, which doesn't necessarily mean it's an entertaining book. It just intrigued me that somebody decided it had merit. I mostly am interested in this one because Robert Downey Jr. is in it and I love him. And because it's described as a dark comedy, which I gobble up all the dark comedies, I do think this could be boring and or tonally not quite right in the same vein. And I'm nervous because the last two dark comedy sort of like political intrigue shows that HBO did, The Regime and White House Plumbers was the name of that other one.
Oh, yeah.
Were both like particularly bad. I'm nervous that this actually won't be good at all. But I definitely am interested. I like Robert Downey Jr. and I like that it's based on a book that is supposedly good. And I haven't said what it's about, but that's okay. I'm not going to. People can check if they want. It's basically what I said. It was political intrigue and a dark comedy. That's it.
Yeah, I think this was not on my list. One, because when we went through quickly, I just didn't write it down. But yeah, I'm not to say that I'm not interested in this. But I agree. I'm feeling knee jerk reactions to a lot of streaming services trying to. It seems like choosing a genre and then like doing a bunch in that genre, and it seems unfair that we both are having the same sort of like, oh, Max didn't really do really well with their previous sort of dark comedies set in a slightly couple years back. Although White House Plumbers is a little different. White House Plumbers was based on that's honestly more in the line of the Apple TV Plus shows, like going to American politics. But I feel like we're both having these knee-jerk reactions to a specific way that a streaming service is dealing with these stories. But they are all made by different teams. Like they're not all the same directors. So maybe we should give the benefit of the doubt to sympathizer.
Yeah, it's not a real prediction that it will be bad. I still think that it has a chance of being good. I guess I'm just tempering my expectations with thinking the ways that it could go wrong. Like, The Regime sounded like it would be great, and it is particularly bad. And so I'm trying to temper my expectations, but I think The Sympathizer could be good. It could be also just like too much political spy drama, which isn't always my thing. So I'm really counting on the dark comedy to make it my thing. And I'll give it a couple episodes at least. If it's not working for me then oh well.
Do you by any chance remember, I think it was an Apple TV Plus show with like spy political intrigue that I maybe watched and I said was really bad, don't watch it. Is this ringing any bells?
I have no bells rung.
Okay, then I'm going to forget about it and we can just move on.
Okay, I do also have Under the Bridge on my list. Do you not have that?
I had it as a question mark.
Under the Bridge is a true crime drama based on a true crime book about a 14-year-old girl in Canada in 1997 who was brutally murdered. True crime is so tough because I find a lot of it to be ethically not okay. Yeah. And I've talked a lot about that before. I've seen the first two, maybe three episodes of this. I am not really allowed to talk about it yet. It's under embargo. I'll just say I think that it is actually like pretty well done and like responsibly told. And it's not just sensationalizing a terrible act. And it's an all-female team behind the scenes. Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone are the stars of it, and obviously they're great. Just the whole thing, it feels appropriately somber in a way that I think like Candy and Love and Death didn't feel, and those are like the most popular recent true crime dramas, I guess, that come to mind. But yeah, so I'm kind of like unsure, I guess, how I feel about this being made, but I will say that it is pretty good so far, and I'm feeling less like bad about it being made than some other true crime dramas.
Yeah, I mean, I think of true crime as much more in your wheelhouse than mine. It does not call to me. And while I'm sure, I mean, not sure, I sort of expected it would be, at least I hoped it would be well done. And so I assumed maybe I would check it out based on your recommendation or the world's. But yeah, again, true crime, not something that I'm super drawn to ever.
Yeah, I always was. And then I think recently I got a little turned off by it. And obviously I've written about that and all that. But I was looking at some interviews like from the creator and the producer, production team of this, and they were really thoughtful about like why they were making this and how they were showing it. And I mean, everything from like their casting decisions to like who was writing it and the thought behind it. And it just felt like a far cry from the typical like, oh, let's make a drama about Ted Bundy because like people love Ted Bundy, and then we're going to cast Zac Efron because people love Zac Efron. Like that is, to me, where I'm like, that's not good. This feels different.
That's cool. Yeah, that seems like a positive sign. Still remains to be seen. I'm so squeamish. I don't like thinking about bad things happening to anyone. And I find it very easy to then just sort of extrapolate. That's not the word I'm looking for, but sort of like carbon copy it onto other people in my life or myself. Any like crazy crime stuff, I'm sort of like, but what if that's my neighbor? Anyway, I don't think you should watch.
No, I don't think this show has your name on it. That's for sure. You don't need to watch this.
Thank you for affirming that.
Letting you go, releasing you from that obligation.
I am sort of, I have it on my list just because I think you expect me to, and I feel like I was trying to live up to my expectations, but the next one, Our Living World.
I do expect you to watch that.
I know.
But it's because you watch those things.
I know, but this one does not, I'm not super excited about it. I called it in the blurb David Attenborough-esque because I think that's what it's trying to emulate, but Cate Blanchett is narrating this series that is quote unquote uncovering the secrets that connect our planet. And I think it's going to be the, like, there was that article a few months back, maybe even a year back at this point, about like the roots of trees, like trees talk to one another. And people were like, oh my God, I love this concept. I love that plants are communicating in this way. And I think that from all of my science friends who like actually understand what's going on, they're like, it's not quite that, but it is interesting. It's cool, but no one really like, in order to make it an interesting story to non-scientists of the world, they sort of have to gloss over a few things. And I feel like that's what this series is going to be. It's going to be like, wow, like, can you imagine that this like causes this to happen, and this animal secreting this enzyme like triggers this whole thing? I don't know. Things that I think are interesting, but it's probably a very surface level conversation about the world, but I could be totally wrong. And also, who am I to poo-poo people who aren't into science and or nature, getting more into science and nature? And that's overall a positive thing. I've talked myself around. I think this show could be good. But yeah, I'm not super excited. I'm gonna hold to that. But it's April 17th on Netflix. It's only 4 episodes.
I don't think I've watched a single Earth or oceans documentary in my life.
Really?
They got really popular like a few years. Is that what they all are? David Attenborough. There's a whole bunch of them, I feel like. I haven't seen any of them.
I think he's the most successful. The narration that he does, first of all, soothing voice. Second of all, it makes it almost feel like you're watching a drama about animals when he is talking about it. And there are a lot of others that are trying to emulate his style that was really successful, and some are fine and others are just sort of like not quite the same.
This could be fine. I don't think it's going to be like mind blowing, but I think it could be a fun sort of meditative watch.
I figured you'd watch it. I think you have the next one on your list also.
Is it Big Mood?
No. Do you not have Dinner with the Parents on your list?
I don't.
I think I thought this was on yours because it's a remake of a British sitcom. But now that I say that out loud, I feel like you would have the British sitcom on your list, but not the American remake of the British sitcom.
Yeah, I will admit when I saw that this was a remake of Friday Night Dinner, which I have not heard of, my thought was, oh, I should go watch Friday Night Dinner.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I want to watch
Dinner with the Parents.
That's fair. Yeah. I heard good things about Friday Night Dinner. I have not seen it.
Yeah, maybe we should both watch that.
And maybe you should watch it. I don't need to watch that.
I'm down. But no, my next one was Big Mood. Just in case anyone wants to see a remake of British sitcom Friday Night Dinner, it will be on Freevee. So free for everyone, April 18th. But I'm excited about Big Mood, which I've already seen most of, but will be coming to Tubi April 19th. Also free? Tubi's free for everyone, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So that's nice. Nicola Coughlan, who is well famous now for, she will be in the next, she was in all of the Bridgerton, but she is the star of the next season of Bridgerton. And she was also Claire in Derry Girls, which I think she's brilliant. But she is now the star of this comedy drama. She plays a woman who is suffering with a mood disorder, but also just like trying to be a late 20-something. She wants to be a playwriter. Taking her lithium kind of like dulls her ability to write, but then also makes it harder to be a friend and a person and stuff. And there are the darkness parts that you would expect to see with someone suffering with a mood disorder, but it's also very light in the way that I think life is balanced, which is what I really like about this, is that it shows you all of the fun parts of being a person and then also the ways those fun parts can be just kind of soured when you're not feeling your best mentally. So I haven't seen how it wraps up, but the 5 episodes I've seen, I think that's almost all of them. The 5 episodes that I've seen are really great. And it feels a little Fleabag-ish is like the best that I can say. Like someone, it is funny, but there are also definitely dark portions. Really good. Like it. Would recommend.
I feel like I'll want to watch it. Fleabag being a comparison is a strong selling point.
Yeah. She's Nicola Coughlan also. I just like, she's so endearing in every role that she's in.
Yeah, she's good. Well, what's next?
We're nearing the end, which is grand because this has been, I mean, listeners won't know this, but we've hit a bunch of technical difficulties today, but that's fine. We're almost there.
Did you finish the first season of The Big Door Prize?
I did. I have it tentatively on my list.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
I did not finish the first season. I thought it was not very good.
I thought it was tonally a little unbalanced, but it was sort of getting its footing by the end. And so it made me a little bit curious about what they're going to do, because there are a lot of still unanswered questions. If you don't know what we're talking about, The Big Door Prize begins in this small town and a machine shows up mysteriously that dulls out people's, what is it? Their
like fate,
their potential, or their true potential in life. Yeah. Which it's very cryptic. It's like a one word thing often. But that sort of dominoes into people making decisions based on this prediction they've gotten from a mysterious machine. And so it's a little bit of a, like a fantasy sci-fi mystery with character driven ensemble comedy, which is an interesting mix. And what else do I want to say about it? Yeah, I like you were saying, I don't know if you had the same thought, but there are certain things in there that just felt a little like out of place in the first season. Not everything was melding together super well, but I'm curious to see how it keeps going.
Yeah, I don't, it's just, and on so many levels wasn't working for me. I know people liked it a lot more than I did. I feel like it was going for like heartwarming comedy with like poignancy, and I just thought it was like not that funny, kind of boring.
like there were elements of like mystery and sci-fi, but those weren't really interesting.
Front and center.
I thought they would be more. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe my expectations made me dislike it. I probably will go back and watch the rest of season one and give season two a shot because of how much people liked it. I seem to be the only one that really did not like it too much.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, I can't remember what we compared it to originally, but it does have the same elements of like The Good Place in that it's trying to answer some philosophical questions and or like internal questions about people, but through comedy and a little bit of a mystery tilt. There's nothing else that I can think of off the top of my head that really feels like this show.
Yeah, me neither. Do you have Dead Boy Detectives on your list?
I did not have Dead Boy Detectives on my list.
I did have it on mine, but I don't actually really want to watch it that much. I just thought we should mention it because I feel like it'll be popular. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it'll be popular the way like Sandman was popular on Netflix, which is like it was pretty niche, but a lot of people did watch it.
Maybe, but I think I think because this is like a spin-off from Sandman, like it's a small character set from Sandman, could bring the fans that of Sandman and could be the people, the new fans that saw Sandman and were like, oh, I really like this style. But I sort of feel like it might not be. It's feeling a little Marvel in that they're like taking too many small characters out and trying to spin them off into their own stories. Marvel got away from me. I'm worried that would happen with this too. And I just like am more interested in Sandman.
I never would have made that comparison. To me, it feels different, but I see what you mean. I guess to me, it feels like Neil Gaiman obviously has all these stories in his head. And the fact that their comics is sort of like secondary. I guess I think that because he writes novels also. And so the medium to me doesn't really make a difference. So I wouldn't have made the comparison to Marvel. I feel like it'll be interesting. I'm only skeptical about it because it's YA. So I just don't know if I'm the audience for it.
Yeah. Teen ghost characters are solving mysteries for supernatural clientele. It's giving like those Cartoon Network shows. Is it animated?
No.
I didn't even think to look that up. Okay.
It's not. No. No.
I think it's
reminded me a lot of what was that show, Lockwood and Co., in the sense it's YA supernatural based on a book and on Netflix. But Lockwood and Co. was not for me. Like, it definitely for YA audiences and not didn't really do anything for me. So that's why I'm like, people might like this. I probably won't, but I will give it a chance.
I know that it's probably not like Danny Phantom, but it sounds exactly like Danny Phantom to me.
Yo, Danny Phantom, he was just 14. I can't hear the words Danny Phantom and not sing that. I don't think this is anything like Danny Phantom, but I appreciate the comp. Okay, we have one more. I have one more. Do you have any more?
I have none more, so you please go for it.
Okay, the last one on my list is The Veil. It stars Elizabeth Moss.
It's not Knuckles.
It's not Knuckles. I never I got worried seen for a the second. Sonic movies.
Okay, The Veil.
The Veil is a thriller series about a potentially deadly game of truth and lies as two women travel from Istanbul to Paris and London, with one of them possessing a secret that the other needs to expose. I don't know why this is the one I decided to word for word read the premise for. I haven't done that, but I guess because I don't know anything about this show other than Elizabeth Moss is in it.
Purposefully cryptic. There's like nothing that people, they're just like, you need a secret for the, to save lives and the other one needs to find it. And that's like all they've said. That's it.
I feel like it won't be good based on nothing other than the, like spy thriller shows are rarely good. What am I basing that on? Citadel maybe? I don't know. It could be good. It could be bad. Elizabeth Moss is like not my favorite, but I put this on the list of intrigue because she is famous. Like I know her name. I know her. And so yeah, I was like, oh, it's Elizabeth Moss's new show. I'll at least give it a chance. It was created by the Peaky Blinders creator. So like maybe it'll be good. Perhaps.
Did you like Peaky Blinders?
No. But like I know that it's good and it's good and people like it. It's not for me. I don't think this show will be for me, but I think it could be good.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I agree. with that sentiment. I really liked the first season of Peaky Blinders and then I sort of fell off, but I know that a lot of other people continued.
Yeah, people love Peaky Blinders. Mm-hmm. So maybe this will be that for people. Maybe it'll be a new Peaky Blinders. I actually don't think vibes are that similar, but it will be. Who knows? I don't know. People really don't like Elizabeth Moss, though, either. She is quite famous, but she's a Scientologist, and people don't like that.
I was wondering if that's the main reason, because I feel like before anyone found out she was a Scientologist, people were like, oh my gosh, she's, I don't know, the best actor of our generation. She was in The West Wing. She was in Handmaid's Tale. What a breath of fresh air. I don't know. And then people were like, she's a Scientologist. And everyone was like, no.
I know. It's interesting because I feel like, do all the Scientologists get that amount of hate or is it just her? People don't hate Tom Cruise, do they?
Yeah, a little.
Oh.
But he is a man and people go softer on men.
That's true. I feel like she has to be a whack-a-noodle to be a Scientologist. But like, what does that have to
say?
I say whack-a-noodle. That's how I say that word. But I don't think that has anything to do with her acting. And I also think if we're not throwing out all of the Scientologists from Hollywood, like, yeah, why are we putting up our pitchforks just for her? That's where I get confused.
Totally agree. I actually could not name for you another Scientologist. I know there was that actress that was in that sitcom that like left Scientology and made that
Leah Remini
show.
Yeah.
That one. Yes. But that's the, I would not be able to tell you.
Other than Tom Cruise. Yeah. And I only knew about Elizabeth Moss because I like said something about her in a TikTok and everyone was like, but she's a Scientologist. So it's like one of those internet things. People just decided like they don't like her because of that.
I mean, I do get the creeps from Scientology, but yeah, I don't know that I necessarily think of everything she's in and go, ooh, Scientology, you know? Like I don't associate her projects with her, what is it, religion, I guess?
Yeah, anyway. I just don't really care. I think that girl from Orange is the New Black was a Scientologist at one point.
Which one? She was also in
she was in that 70s show.
Donna. Yeah, what
but
is
she
her
is
name?
Not a Scientologist anymore, according to the internet.
Ooh, seems so hard to break out of.
Don't put your pitchforks up for her.
Okay.
Did Nicole Kid was Nicole Kidman was a Scientologist when she was with Tom Cruise, right? Anyway,
we're like,
she's not
to
anymore.
We don't have to go into all of this. But yeah.
That's it. That's my whole list.
Me too. We've done a lot. there's been a lot into this. But anyway, if any of these sound interesting, we will probably talk about them and or write a reviews about them in the coming month. Again, check out the entire list of all the premiere dates on our newsletter, doubletake.substack.com. And we will be back with a catch-up / talk about the new episodes of Shogun, the Three-Body Problem. I'm trying to think of other things that we both watched that we want to talk about. But yeah, if you watched either of those, come join us for our combos in the next week or so. Thanks for listening. Find links to follow us on socials and subscribe to our newsletter in the show notes of this episode. Thank you for listening to Double Take. If you like what you heard, please support us by subscribing and leaving a review. See you next time. The Double Take podcast is produced by Jess Ball and me, Jennifer Cullen.